Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Justin may be with us shortly, so thanks for coming in, and I might have to, a little bit of a feedback thing there. I can move if it stays. So let me do that. All right. So we have some special guests with us today that are going to talk to us. And we're going to talk today about a special kind of coaching. And it's a type of coaching that doesn't happen too often. And it's very real and very personal. And it's the type of coaching that happens when someone has to be transported into a rehab facility. So we're going to talk about that, how that happens, and how something that can otherwise look pretty traumatic to the person that's having to be transported to a rehab facility, how that can actually be a junction point, an origination point to a coaching relationship, and how healing that can be. So with us today, we have our outstanding recovery coaches, sober coaches, Sherrod Ellis and Neil Williams. Fellas, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm going to still get my thing set up here. At least we're not feeding back. Well, fellas, kind of interesting. All three of us were kind of involved in a transport situation about a week or 2 weeks ago. And first of all, I just show you the great collaborative spirit that we have, right? In this instance, Neil got the initial call. And then, so Neil, once you got the call, you were out of town, and kind of walk us through what all happened.
So initially the call came in a couple days prior to when I spoke to you guys. And first, what I always do, let me start over. So the mom called and she said, my son is in all this stuff and, he's out right now and I need to get him transported. And so I did the offer to the individual, have you asked them, if first you always want to encourage them to, have an open approach and see if they're willing, because you never know,
right.
It really depends on the individual. Sometimes they're all about it and they just didn't know help was available. And so in this situation, she did that. So the first night I talked to her for a little while because she was just a little bit, I think she was probably frazzled or whatever, there's a lot going on. So there was a lot of emotion involved. And so I kind of talked her through that and gave her a little bit of direction as to how to start the initial conversation with the child. And so a couple of days later, I didn't hear from her, so I sent her a text message, left her a voicemail, just checking in to see how everything was going and to see how that conversation went. And she didn't respond until a couple of days later. She called me and said, hey, conversation didn't go well. He wasn't trying to hear it. He doesn't want to accept help. But being a minor and being in the situation they're in, she said, he's getting help. So that's when they make the decision to call folks like us in and, hey, he's gone. So I need your help getting in there. So that's how it happened. I was out of town. So it's for me at that point, and it's always kind of this way. I'm not so much it's about much more than business. That's what makes what we do unique, is because someone needs to help and they don't know where to go for help. And fortunately they got my number. So I'm always going to call the folks I know who I can rely on, who are going to do the job the right way. So that's when I call you guys.
Now, didn't you give one of the transport companies a chance? They were too busy, or what was that?
Yeah, I called the transport company first.
Right.
And that's all they do. And he was in the middle of something, and he said, he was like, you know, I'm in the middle of something. Can I call you back? And that, you know, of course, I'm going to say, yeah, that's fine. But the mom was not, she wasn't waiting. And that's how some of this stuff gets. It, you don't have a whole lot of time to sit around. So I think all of us can speak from experience. We're on call all the time. So it's not, you can't just say, well, can we do tomorrow all the time? Because sometimes there may not be a tomorrow.
Exactly. So then I got the call from you, and I found out, you know, there's no accidents in God's world, but, you know, this particular family was extremely close to where I live. I would say a 10-minute, 12-minute drive down the road. From where I live. So I thought, let me, you know, I didn't really have too much, you know, going on. And, at that moment, you know, so I thought, well, you know what, let me talk to Sherrod, you know, and so then gave the call to Sherrod, and he was available as well. And so once I got a commitment from him, I talked to the mom, and man, we weren't there soon enough. You know what I mean? And we got there fairly quick, I thought. And you know, there's always a little bit of traffic on you know, from where Sherrod was coming from, but we got there in a timely manner. And and so they were waiting on us. It looked like, you know, maybe Sherrod, you can help me, but you see these people outside. There was one, there's that couple, two, three, the mom, four, the daughter, five. So there's five people outside of this house walking around like chickens, whatever, you know, man. And I waited to exit the vehicle. I always like the grand entrance, you know. And so I waited, right, Sherrod? So go ahead and pick it up from there, Sherrod. So what happens? We exit the vehicle and then kind of tell everybody what happens from there.
Yeah, we walk up in the yard, and I really like the way with them and kind of letting them know what the agenda, what we're there for. You kind of set the stage, and then I kind of chimed in on, hey, we just go up there, we introduce ourselves. And we kind of establish a therapeutic bond with the young man so that he knows that we're not there to harm him, you know, because he's already in a bad mindset, you know, thinking that everybody's out to get him and I'm not going. But I like the fact of how you, you know, let the family know, hey, here's how we'll transport, you know, we'll family members, you know, transport. And that way it takes away a liability. So I really appreciate that. That was really good.
Yeah.
And the main thing too is making sure that when we do go in, you know, it was a little struggle to get into the door because he had it locked. So the first thing that I look for you going in is to look for, you know, to secure the environment. You know, you want to look for anything that could be dangerous, right? You know, and you just kind of asking mom, is he violent? Is he anything like that? And then, you know, establishing a rapport. You know, I did, you know, see something which I was able to secure, right, and pass it on, and you were able to get it out and get it to where we needed it. But
right. So yeah, another couple of things here. We went ahead and kind of introduced the roles of everybody, what I was going to do, what Sherrod was going to do. We had them back up the transport vehicle, back it into the driveway, strategically, the rear passenger open, parent lock's going to be on. We had a designated driver. We had a designated shotgun. Sherrod had his designated spot, and the young man was going to be in the middle, flanked with another family member on the young man's left side. So everybody had their role. And I learned that from prison and cell extractions, you know, arm, right arm. Your job is the left arm. Just kidding. Anyway, we didn't do that, folks. It didn't get to that. All right. So I digress. But so everybody had their role. The individuals locked up, barricaded-ish in an upstairs bedroom. Made sure we had a clear path down to, you know, as we didn't know we had a slow exit or a fast exit, but we want a clear path, straight shot to the vehicle, get this person inside the vehicle and secured and on the way to the rehab destination. Now, so we go up there. The individual's locked in their room, not willing to come out. Mildly verbally combative, but very, very mild, which was good, but still not willing to come out of the room. The young lady just bent it, trying to get into the door.
No, that was already in the room. It was on the bookshelf.
Oh, gosh, okay.
And as I was kind of scanning and looking, I looked up and I saw it, and that's when I...
Okay.
Secured.
So that, and it's a huge move, folks. Like, so, yeah, so he sees the knife, he gets the knife, you pass the knife, I believe, to the young lady, then I get rid of, you know, whatever, we dispose of the knife. Boy, that was a good move there. And then the mom would say what she had laundry to pick up or something like that. What was she able to say, Sherrod, to get the door?
Yeah, she was just telling, please, I need to get the laundry. Please open the door. I just need to get the laundry. And eventually he did. And then that's when he saw the initial shock, because he saw myself and he saw you. And then it was, you know, his little verbal escalation. But like you said, again, although he was upset, I still felt like he was compliant.
Okay. He was upset. So we go into a good formation. You went ahead and took charge of the door. I went ahead around to the front and posted up between the window and a bathroom door. So in case I needed to practice my defensive safety skills, I could cover that zone. You did a marvelous job, obviously, of covering the door. Once we started talking, I went from a standing position to I went on my knees, stayed in the same position where I could still whatever. But I went on my knees as a kind of a way of de-escalating, you know, the situation. The individual here was about probably what, 5'5", 6", 100 pounds. What was his size, Sherrod? I kind of forget. I knew it wasn't.
I think that's about accurate. I mean, he was small framed.
And that he wasn't tweaking. He wasn't on an amphetamine type of a look. More of a sedative, Xanax kind of a look. Guy had been kind of holed up in his bed there in the corner. And so once we have our perimeter safely established, then Sherrod, talk about some of the things you said to him. How'd you engage him? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, at that time, I mean, you want to engage a young man like that from a neutral place. You don't want to make him feel like, you know, like you're there as part of the support for the mother in a way of, yeah, you need to go. It was more on a supportive level of letting him know that, hey, we're not here to harm you. We're not here to judge you. We're just here to kind of safely assist with this process. And so it was just allowing him to vent and talk about, well, you know, my dad, I want to go with my dad. And we was like, hey, well, you know, we'll let you and mom, you know, establish that. Because you don't want to get involved with that. You want to stick to the mission of what you're there for. So it was just kind of reinforcing, hey, here's what we're here for, and here's what needs to take place. You kind of allow a little bit of time for him to vent as he's getting dressed. That was the first thing that we wanted to establish, was that we're not going to allow you to go into a bathroom or a secure area by yourself. And so that was the biggest thing, and said, hey, you can go ahead and get dressed right here. It's okay. He was still a little upset with that, but he got dressed. And then there's a point where you have to go on and take the initiative to say, okay, here's what we have to do now. And because again, they'll keep stalling. Let me call my dad. Right. Let me do this. But at the same point, you got to keep in mind, our mission is here to transport. And so we have to also keep that in mind for time, things of that nature. So we had to shift a little bit and say, okay, well, here's what needs to happen. And here's what we need to do. And we can allow you and mom and all those to take care of that, you know, while we're in transport or once you get to the facility.
That was really, very good language on your behalf. You know, hey, you can take care of that when we're on our way. But right now we have a job to do. We got to get down the road. We did allow him to call his dad, and his dad did have some interesting things to say. Then we got the mom back in the room. She's the custodial parent, and that's a wrap. We probably should have, in a perfect world, we'd had the divorce decree. Mm-hmm. The divorce decree would have established her as the caregiving parent, but it seemed, that the father lived in a northern state really far away. I felt that it was true that, that this woman really is the custodial parent that makes all the healthcare decisions for her son. And we were able to go ahead and act accordingly on her behalf, with her consent, her blessing, her directive, and by no means was there any kind of a forced play here. So then the young man gets dressed, and he comes down, right? He comes downstairs, and we get him in the vehicle, and off he goes. Any other thoughts, Sherrod, about the exit?
No, I think it was executed very well. I mean, I guess, what comes with the knowledge and the experience of all three of us that we have with the experience of transporting is just something that, hey, being able to work in that unison like that and kind of pick up on the vibe of what's needed. And I think it was just orchestrated and carried out very well.
Yeah. And again, folks, this, I think, Sherrod and Neil and myself, with our background and training, we're able to read a situation really fast and adapt to that situation really fast. And just like me dropping to my knees, and it's like you using the language you used, really put this person a little bit more at ease and enabled them to leave of their own free will versus a struggle, which could have ensued, but it didn't. The person walked at a good cadence down the stairs, and you were in the front, I was in the rear, and it was a good, just a good movement into the car. So I'll talk about the rest of the move here, and then we'll get back to some more general counseling and coaching types of things that I know our listeners want to hear about. But if you could, Sherrod, just kind of tell us, what kinds of things did you talk about to the family? I know it was a little quiet there for a while, but did you make any type of inroads or statements or reassuring comments to the young man as he was getting closer to his rehab facility?
Yeah, absolutely. In our profession and how we train, we know that don't be afraid to use silence. So I kind of allowed the situation to be silent for most of the ride. He did get a little verbally aggressive a little bit with his mother and his sister. I want to talk to my father and everything. And so what I just reassured to him is that, hey, I just want you to know that this is about helping you get better. I know you may not see it at this point right now because you're very upset, but just know that this is in your best interest. I just want you to do things the right way. And, he was like, yeah, but I should have a right to talk to my dad. And I said, well, I think you'll get that established once you get there. And as we pulled up, there was no resistance. I just said, hey, man, you promised me that you'll, walk in with me to where we don't have to. He said, yes, sir, no problem. So we get him in, and he did get a little escalated once we got to the process of where he needed to speak with the intake nurse and get all of that information. And there were some other people standing outside. And so I just politely went around there and just kind of spoke with him and saying that, hey, man, HIPAA is very serious. And I just want you to realize that HIPAA is about protecting your rights for your health and all the things, but you have some people standing around the corner and you're allowing them to kind of know all of your business. So just kind of talk to him a little bit about that. And he was able to kind of calm down. And then I encouraged the mother to reach back out to Mr. Neal, because as I told her, I think that that would be a good follow-up because of the services he provides. And I think that that would be good for her to reach back out to this young man so that he can come in and hopefully provide some coaching for that young man, as well as for her, because we do know that she's also in recovery, as well as her husband.
That's right. Her and her husband, I believe.
Yeah, I believe the husband has 5 years.
Yeah, the her husband's, I guess, the stepfather has long-term sobriety, which is great. It's just, and this is a whole nother topic in itself, but it's interesting when that's what I thought was unique. Most times when I get those calls, it's not from a couple who are both have long-term sobriety or experience in a program of recovery. That's pretty unique.
And even the daughter. Yeah, remember, even the daughter was in recovery.
Wow. Yeah, and just that's rare. Mm-hmm. But it is not rare to see how different it is when it's your own family. And I mean, it's like everything you've learned and know about the program goes out the window when it's your kid. And I mean, the things I was saying when I was talking to the mother, these were very basic things that we were going over about recovery and how to approach a newcomer, someone who's not willing, someone who is. And it was like, it was all brand new to her because it's just a whole different lens when you're looking at your child. And you can't fault them for that. You can't. But that's, I think that's why what we do is so instrumental, because when folks like this who think, well, I know the program, I'm in recovery, you know, I've got this. Well, until it really happens to you in your backyard, I think that's difficult to say.
Great, great points. Yeah, man. And yeah, all it's, yeah, everything changes when it's your own family. And that's why you have experts like us that are empathetic, understand, but also going to be way more objective about the situation at hand here and be able to get the mission done. You know, this kind of is an interesting paradigm, because what happened here with this movement is absolutely contra to everything we learn in coaching school. All three of us hold the same credential. We're all three CPCs, right? We're certified professional coaches. And throughout that process, we were trained to be like, oh, you know, your client knows the best answer for themselves. Great coaches are full of great questions. Well, you know, this is a special situation, wasn't it? Right. Look, I'm just poking at the situation, because did coaching take place during this? Absolutely. Is coaching probably going to take place after this? Absolutely. Is that young man going to need a recovery coach or a sober companion or a sober coach? Absolutely. Hands down. And you guys are going to be there, or us as a team, but more so Neil and possibly Sheree, you know, whoever, you know, but you guys are going to be there. Neil's going to be there for him in those two capacities. So yeah, sometimes, you know, the age of consent for certain things in Texas, and when people are underneath that age and they're engaging in life-threatening behavior, sometimes a more directive hand toward health is needed and necessary, and no court in the land would balk at that, particularly how this was executed. But and it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So hopefully this young man will find it, his way, his path in recovery, stick with it, have his own recovery community and safety net and resources. And again, I can't, and the other thing I want to underscore is how grateful the family was. I'm sure they expressed some gratitude to you, Sherrod, but she called me and the mom called me and sent long texts thanking us for what we did and how we did it. So yeah. And we did it for a very small cost. Any transportation company would have hit them, you know, for three figures plus, I think, and four figures rather. You know what I'm saying? But something with a comma.
Yeah.
For real. Oh, Lord, I don't have enough caffeine in me right now, man.
Hey, can I say something?
Sure.
You said something, I forget how you worded it. Talking about the coaching and a more directive approach. There's a guy who I have a lot of respect for. He's worked in this industry for a couple decades at least. And he said this really well. He said, you know, in recovery, when you're talking about 12-step program, the newcomer comes in and your approach is, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you know, whereas in this, sometimes it's you approaching, I know you don't want what we have right now. And I know you don't necessarily want to do anything to get it, but we're trying to help you out and steer you that way. And so you kind of have to understand that they might not know what's best right now, and they might not necessarily want it, but being in that position before, you kind of have to understand that, okay, well, if we at least plant this seed, and if we at right. least address the issue at hand now, later on they will realize, hey, that's what I should be doing. Or they'll know where to go back to when it really gets messy.
Exactly. And that's the thing about us as a team, you know, myself being a counselor and a coach, and, you know, but Sherrod, you're a mentor, right? I mean, so the whole mentoring, you can fly the mentoring flag. I mean, we all could theoretically, but you can, you know, that's your business. Next level focus there, ladies and gentlemen, wearing the shirt. All right. Right. But that in that part of the mentoring process is showing your client a path, showing your client methodology to a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to take what they say. Take what they're not saying, and you want to kind of lay out a blueprint for them and help them to develop that. You want to help them to develop, you know, the life skills, you know, kind of fine tune them. I mean, because a lot of the people that I work with, they have them. They have great skills. They come from great resources, great stock, but it's just they disconnect from their ability to use them. So it's just kind of like reinforcing, and just kind of like the difference from the coaching is more, like you say, it is more of direction and things of that nature, and kind of pointing out, you know, what's your blueprint. And so I love the fact to complement it with the coaching, because now, you know, it gives you, plus with the therapy too, the therapy background that I have too, of being able to say, hey, well, what does that look like for you?
That's true.
You know, what does that sound like for you? What does change look like? What does it sound like?
It all starts with you getting in the back seat of this vehicle. that's directive mentoring. Oh, but and that's true. That was the only thing. You know, when we were going to do what we needed to do by nearly whatever means necessary to get that mission accomplished, but we didn't have to go there. So, awesome, man. So let's talk about, I want you guys to talk a little bit about other transports you've done. And have you guys done some transports? I guess we'll go with Neil. You done some transports where you really were kind of coaching and mentoring and kind of holding the person's hand all the way to the gate, to the place, or you have any experiences like that, Neil?
Yeah. So a client I have right now, and this is what you hope for. So I did the intervention for the family.
That's right.
This intervention did not go smoothly. I was towards the end of it. I was kind of, you know, I you have to stay optimistic and you have to stay focused all the way through, no matter what the outcome is. But it was looking like this wasn't going to go well. And this dude was just going to jump ship and he was hitting the streets. But we stayed focused and, you know, I had to redirect the family a couple times. We moved around the house because he was wanting to get up and go outside and he wanted to leave. And they were like, what do we do? So anyways, got through that. He agreed. So I took him to treatment, sat with him through intake, got him some cigarettes, talked him down. He got upset and he calmed down. You know, all these emotions that come into this process. So he goes to treatment, gets out of treatment. And, you know, in that transport, we had a really good conversation, whereas during the intervention, he got really upset, was arguing with mom and dad. I kind of calmed him down, got him into the car. Once we're in the vehicle and it's just me and him, it was quiet and it was a conversation. And then I was able to tell him about me and I was able to relate. And he realized that I had been where he was at. And so we really connected on that drive. The drive is huge, that transport, where it's, if you're ever alone, if they're willing, you know, then you get the opportunity to really talk. And that's not always the case, but with mine, it was. And so he went to treatment. Then he left. The family took him out before. Now, this was against my recommendation, but they chose to bring him home before he completed the program. And but they brought him home on the condition that he would do coaching. And so he said, well, I'll talk to Neil. And because I had made that.
There you go. You made a good connect. Right. Made a good connection.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm still working with him. And I know I can say this without, you know, breaking any rules or confidentiality. He said, this was last week. He said, you know, this is different than all the other people. And I feel like I'm talking to someone who actually cares. And I feel like I'm hanging out with a friend. And he made sure to say, don't get flattered or anything. But I said, of course not. Of course not. But it was just, he expressed that level of comfort. And so now we're actually starting to see some real progress.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. And that really does what differentiates therapy versus coaching. You know, as a therapist, you're kind of in this professional role and there's things you just can't do. You can't relate to your client in a certain way because that would be in breach of a therapeutic, a license type of a capacity. However, as CPCs, we're able to do coaching, which frees us up. And if we're doing coaching or mentoring and or mentoring and coaching, that frees us up to be at the client's level and to be able to relate to them in a variety of different locations and capacities and scenarios. So I think that's really good, even though, and I've had several myself where I did the intervention and then got them for a longer haul post-treatment for aftercare. So, you know, that's the important, the important thing is to keep in, like you said, and what Sherrod knows as well, is that transportation time is crucial, keeping the person engaged. They want to listen to a little bit of their music, that's fine. I don't let them. I've done plane rides as well as long car rides. And, you know, don't let them get too dissociated from what's going on. Keep a little bit of tension on the line, like this is what's happening, this is where we're going. You can answer questions about the rehab facility. If you let them know when they can, you know, some of the rules or when they might be able to see their families or when they can get visitation or when they get a first phone call or, you know, if there's a level system, what that's about, if it's a wilderness place, what that's about. So it's always good to know a little bit about the destination so you can have some talking points with the person. But again, it's almost like hostage negotiation. That's what I learned. Went to hostage negotiation school in 1993, FBI. And, you know, keeping the conversation going and reassuring them that, you know, everything is going to be okay and really setting that positive tone. And that's that's part of coaching as well, where hostage negotiation meets coaching. So I want to take this time. Sherrod and I went on an undisclosed ride. Guy comes straight out of jail, and we're in a minivan. And the guy, when he comes out of jail, he didn't have his contacts on. He didn't have his glasses on. And he has some vision issues. But the guy comes out of jail, recognizes me. We get say, hey, why don't you go ahead and sit in the back? Now the back of the minivan open. He gets in. Boom. Sherrod pops right in next to him, man. And I'm in the driver's seat. You know, hey, you know, what's going on? And is this your bodyguard? And I'm like, no, man, no, Sherrod's Sherrod's not like I was gonna get my ass beat, you know, by this dude coming out, just hilarious, you know. But anyway, so no, man, we're gonna go on a ride. Okay, all right, all right. So here we go, man. Interstate 35 northbound. Hey, man, wasn't that Texas Motor Speedway? Oh, yeah, yeah, it was Texas Motor Speedway, man. I thought I was going home. No, man, we're not going home, man. Keep on going. Hey, is that University of North Texas? Yeah, man, that's UNT, man. We're in Denton right now. Well, I thought I was going to fly somewhere. Nah, man, you know, you don't have your license, so you can't fly anywhere. Hey, man, is this Oklahoma City? Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Anyway, that's pretty fun, right? We went 16 hours, man, to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Had a couple smoke breaks and two bathroom breaks, right?
Yeah.
But you did some good talking on that trip, right, Sherrod? A lot of camp, a lot of food.
Great young man.
16 hours, I wouldn't recommend that, folks, unless you're just incredibly blessed or lucky or whatever. But and then we deadheaded back, right? Made the deposit, got a meal, and turned right around and went 16 straight in, man. So not something I want to do anytime soon, but that was an interesting, you know, these long haul runs. So what other parts of the, so we have engaging the client, being positive. Also, you know, I think it's important that we let them know the, and you guys both do that, right? Let them know who you are, what you do, not just interventions, not just transports, but you also do a whole range of services yourselves. So you guys do that, right? I mean, it's a rhetorical question, but kind of speak to that, how each of you does that. So Neil, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's also important to let them know that you're supportive of their stance as well. Even though that they're distorted and they may be a little off with what they're doing, you want to kind of be empathetic and supportive of the fact that, hey, I can only imagine, you know, what it's like for you right now in your situation. You know what I mean? So you also want to let them know that, hey, I'm here to support you. You know what I mean? So I'm not just here to transport you or here to make you feel like I'm just here to look at you as the problem and just do away with the problem. Definitely here to support you. So I think that's also a big strategy to use. And I know in the transport, you know, for me, I've had a couple of them where I've been on a plane. I've also, you know, went down to East Texas. Took a couple of young men down to East Texas to a ranch down there. And I guess the biggest thing that I like to do is get them talking about what they enjoy. You know, when's the last time you talked about the things that doesn't have anything to do with your situation of I'm looking down at you because I'm messing up. But when have your accolades, when have you been, you know, rewarded for the good things that you've done? So I kind of get them talking in that direction. And what would it look like for you to get that back? You know, and where's the transition period where you lost it? Because if we can figure out where you lost it, we can pick back up and say, okay, let's work with, you know, what you need. You know, what are you lacking? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of one of the techniques that I use is just kind of get them talking about those good times and realizing that, you know what, what's going on in your head right now? Man, I see you, see like you're happy. You know how we get taught in therapy, you know, you're looking for those signs, you know, you're looking for the shift in the eyes, you know, hey, you went somewhere. Where'd you go? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The body language follows that. So now what's taking place? Man, it feels good. Absolutely. But guess what? It feels good and it's natural. And to point that out is a big thing too, I believe, working with someone struggling with addiction, that you had a natural breakthrough and you experienced that same level of high, but it wasn't artificial. It was genuine. It was authentic. And what does it take for you to get back to that place?
Yeah, and I also, I like what he was saying, what Sherrod said about talking to them about their interests and, you know, their hobbies or whatever their passions are, because you want to remind them that they're a person, they're an individual, they mean something and they have a purpose. You want to reinforce that, mm-hmm. because I know for me, when I was going through that, I was fully convinced that I was a lost cause and I served no purpose and I was just mm-hmm. a pain in the ass to everybody. So my approach when I have someone, like when I'm working with an individual, it's, I want them to understand that, hey, I've been through something similar, but before I do that, I usually validate what they're feeling. I let them express what they're feeling and I let them know, I understand what you're feeling is completely normal and you're not out of place to have those emotions. Like, that's fine. I get it. And then I let them know that, hey, I've been there. And then I like to tell them when it changed for me and what's different about my life now. And so I let them know that I understand what they're feeling, but I also remind them that, hey, my story is different and your story is yours. I don't know exactly what you're going through, so I can't say that right. I've experienced the level of pain that you feel right now, but I know that I've been through something similar. And then I kind of get to, so I want them to understand that I know how they feel to an extent. And then I follow that up with letting them know that, hey, I've got enough knowledge and experience on this to where I can help you. Right. Like, I'm here to help. I want to help and I can. Right. And that's where I talk to him about the other things I do, you know, whether it be the coaching and, hey, I've worked with someone with this. Yeah. And then the family members are like, well, we don't know what to do once he's gone. Well, hey, I've done this before and, right. and I can help you guys with that. And just them knowing that someone's available makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, one of the edges, the good edge that you have is that, you know, you can fall back on your experience, you know, and you can say, hey, I've been through something similar. Hey, my situation resulted in even worse consequences than what you're experiencing right now with me. You know, I'm here because I don't want you to maybe experience. I mean, I'm not trying to steal your thunder, man, but you know what I mean? Like, boy, I mean, so you have that luxury in it, you know, and people in that are also in recovery, but also professionally certified or licensed can do both, you know, and that's a real, real good, just a real good situation that you have. And also your youth or your apparent youth, which is a good thing, man.
I'll take it.
I know that. Please enjoy it while it lasts, brother. Right. Right. Sherrod.
Yeah, absolutely.
The same last 30 years, Sherrod's is timeless, but anyway, but anyway, so I think those are really, really good things. And man, you know, that's the beauty of the unsung beauty of transports, that you get to do. So, you know, it's kind of like a crisis management, you know, you get to utilize all your skills right there. You know what I mean? Assessment, probing, asking the right question, you know, gauging the person, de-escalating the person. So it's, man, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was kind of fun to get back in that little bit of adrenaline there on the setup, right? As even though it's a young man's game, I, you know, this old dog, you know, a couple, you know, it was good. It was fun. And look, what a great team effort, man, Neil. And thanks for pushing that to the old guys. because, you know, we were able to really lace that situation up. So you couldn't ask for better. Couldn't ask for a better team, man. This family is absolutely blessed to have met you. And then just the way it shook down. There's no accidents in God's world, man. That this thing was just too perfect. It just moved so smooth. You know, I had the facility director. I had corporate, two down from corporate, waiting. I know Sherrod had done his thing. And so the facility was very appreciative and excited to see that there were a couple of old guys in the transport game back again, if they need anybody. But believe me, that was more of a serendipity and than anything else. Okay, then how are we doing? We got four more minutes, 3 minutes and change. You guys have any other tidbits or final thoughts of wisdom about the coaching piece along with transport and not so much intervention, but transport? You'll have any other things we didn't cover?
We got the bulk of it.
Yeah, I think we did a really pretty good job. I think kind of covered every aspect of it.
Just
reinforcing to those people out there that are listening that if you know of anyone, you know, just make sure that you get a good therapeutic team, a team that is right, very experienced and knowledgeable about, because it is a very delicate and sensitive situation when you have to enter into somebody's world that is kind of distraught and kind of, you know, offbeat. So,
but and to piggyback off that, I think the three of us are, I don't think we're extremely fortunate to have the background. Each of us has a unique approach, experience, to where when we all come together, it's kind of hard to find a hole in it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I transported federal prisoners for 27 years, you know what I mean? Off and on. And that's an experience, and that's good. And I'm fine to be that person in the triangle, you know what I mean? The hard line, the transportation, would you call me the federale or whatever?
Sherrod
was pointing at me, man. This is the great irony. Sherrod's more the physical presence, right? And he's like, man, you don't want to mess with that dude. He's pointing at me like, man, you don't want to mess with that man over there now. So that's a little bit of irony there. And the kid's like befuddled, like, what? Like, is this guy some sort of a kung fu? You know, like, nah, man, that was hilarious. And that you could see the look of confusion on that kid's face. Like, I thought I was scared of you. Oh, man, you got to be that dude over there, man, by the window, man. That was hilarious. So it was always a little bit of comic relief in these things. Hey, so folks, so go ahead, Neil, give yourself a plug, Elevated Lifestyle Academy. Go ahead and plug your...
Yeah, the website is Elevated Lifestyle Academy, recovery coaching, sober escort, sober companion, full range of services all on the website, Instagram and Facebook, Neil Williams or Elevated Lifestyle Academy. You should be able to find me.
Sherrod.
Oh, yeah. Next Level Focus, mentoring, Fort Worth chapter. Like I say, interventions, transports, mentoring, coaching, you know.
Okay.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Oh, no. It is. Yeah, no, you guys are awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Just a blessing to have you guys as friends and now to have you guys as colleagues. You know, we all own our own businesses, but we all come together as needed. And I'm just so excited about the future. And, man, I'm just so glad that you guys came on the show today. Thank you very much for sharing about coaching and mentoring and the transportation process. I think this will be a fun show for people to come back to on Apple Podcast and iHeart Radio now that we're on iHeart and some of the other aggregators. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in to another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. We'll be back next week, of course, with some more excitement. Come by our social media, The Concierge Coaches, on on Instagram, Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook, and we're on LinkedIn as well. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week. Stay safe. Stay positive in these very interesting times here in late 2020. And we'll see everybody next week. Take care and have a great week.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.